Welcome to the Play Talk podcast.
Hi, I'm Max.
And I'm Sarah.
So, here we are. We're going to chat today about play and research and researching play in its kind of widest way of thinking about it. And we thought we might start with each of us talking a bit about what that means for us, how we go about researching play. And that's all right, isn't it, Max? Shall I go first?
Yeah, please do.
Yes, I shall go. Well, there we go. I'll go first. I am actually researching play in with a university. So I suppose that is the first thing that's the context for me doing it, because I think that's it. If we're saying researching play in quite an open way by what we mean by research, so that is already, I'm waving my hands to indicate that I'm in a bit of a confined situation for researching play, because it's through a university and that has systems and histories and ways of doing things. And I think for me, so rather than talk about all that generally, for me, I think some of the key things have been about, actually, one of the key things people talk about is ethics, and I don't think that's been such a big thing for me because I feel like that was something I was worrying about anyway. So ethics, but ethics is a process you need to go through if you're going to do research, because a university has to say, someone has to approve your plan and say, yes, you're not going to be harming anybody or doing something unethical. So that's quite a big thing in the context of research. But I think the tricky thing in with that is, in order to get someone to say, yes, the research you're doing, whatever it is ethical, you've got to explain in advance what it is you're going to do. And I think that's where researching play, and for me particularly researching play with children, gets a little bit challenging, because people say things like, well, what is it you're researching? What is play? And how are you going to research it? And all the time I was thinking at any point about doing this, I kept picturing me stepping into a setting with children trying to research play, and them just kind of pulling me, looking at me, asking me questions, doing things. And all the research I'd read, well, not all, quite a lot of what I'd read was being people saying, oh, I was going to do this, and then children ran off with a microphone, or they took my pen and paper and did things with it. I thought, yes, that's, yeah. So for me, that gave me a lot of anxiety about how to do it, but also made me quite clear, like, I cannot plan this, because it's going to be messy, and it's with children, and it's playful. And also, maybe we could talk about what is play, but I kept thinking this vague sense of, well, I kind of think I know what it is when I see it, but then also going, but also I don't know, because I can't, it's not always a visual thing. So the defining the thing you're meant to be researching before you research it, and all of that tied me up in knots. So that's one little thing for me. And the other big thing then for me is the whole discussions people have about, I don't know, it's qualitative, quantitative, and I, you know, stutter over the words, but, you know, stories and narratives and accounts of individuals and experiences versus kind of numbers and measurements, so that general way of putting it. And those are the big debates in research. But to be honest, a lot of the debate has moved past all that and is actually exploring much more messy ways of thinking about what research is, which probably is a good point to point to you and hand over to you, Max, because I think you're maybe free of some of those things.
Because I'm a mess.
Probably got other constraints. Yeah. Well, you're researching it in another way. That's the point, isn't it? The idea of what research is such a, it's finding things out, isn't it? Finding things out. That's what research is.
Absolutely.
So what are you finding out?
So yeah, so I'm having to put a pin in all the questions I want to ask you that just came to mind listening to you talk, and I'll talk a bit about myself. So I'm not an academic and not officially a researcher, I guess. Like, researcher never comes after my name in any biography or in any way people think of me, I guess. But part of my practice as an artist and play worker, I'm both of those things, sometimes both at the same time, sometimes somewhere in between. So, you know, it's a that's an interesting thing in itself. But yeah, part of my practice is kind of, I think, is research, even if I don't think of it that way, because the mindset I go into my work with and need to is one of like curiosity, paying attention, gathering information. These things, from what I understand of research, all feel like things that are part of research to me. So yeah, a bit of context. Like I do a lot of different things, but what I'm really thinking about here, kind of aspect of my work, is my work with people. And I say people because I work with children and adults, and even teenagers. But yeah, they're neither quite children and not adults. So yeah, so my work is often around working with people who have like maybe quite complex needs or experiences, people who are disabled and or neurodivergent, often people who spend a lot of their life in institutional spaces. And I work often one-to-one, to try and facilitate and create opportunities for play for those individuals. But the thing about that is, because of the world and the context and the often life experience of the people I work with, I pretty much can't assume that they've had meaningful play opportunities. You know, when you go into most settings, most typical settings, you can kind of make a bit of, obviously it varies hugely, make a bit of assumption that most of those children will play, will have chance to play in a way that makes sense to them. Like I said, but not to say that's not compromised, and it obviously varies hugely. But yeah, usually that's not an assumption I can make for various reasons. Because the people around, the people who support that person might not be have like the capacity or the ability to like understand what their play is, what it looks like. They might be under pressure from other outside people to try and change the play, and then when I get into sort of adult spaces, it's not even really on the agenda, or thought about so much. Or on the flip side, I found going into spaces, for example, of adults with who be considered to have profound and multiple learning disabilities, it's often almost seen as disrespectful to think about play because it's seen as maybe like patronizing or seeing the adult as a child, which I completely don't agree
As a
with.
child,
I'm sure there's a ways you can do that, but I believe everyone needs to play regardless of what age they are, you know. So yeah, so because even though my work is, you know, my work's about facilitating and creating opportunities for play, there are often a lot of barriers to that for the people I work with. So I think this like research mindset really comes into play because I need to learn a lot, often quite quickly, to be able to figure out how to do this, because it's often not obvious or straightforward. Does that make sense?
It's yeah,
It's,
absolutely. And
yeah.
what I find fascinating is like so I didn't used to do research. Research has not been a lifelong thing. It's a recent thing for me, but I think it's meant that in other situations I've been in, sometimes I'm listening to people saying things or I'm watching something happening and thinking, part of my newfound research brain is like, oh, this would be so interesting. I wish I could document this in some way because it's so insightful and so helpful and links to the research I'm reading. But obviously, it hasn't got a research frame around it with all the structure and systems and permissions, so that of course I can't, and it makes me value those that structure because I think it's important. But like then I think, but then I think, but I'm right here learning right now. You know, I kind of think that's the, but that is the point. I'm lucky me. I'm getting to hear this and learn from this, and I don't have to go through all of those systems and structures. I can do it right now and make use of it. But it's
Exactly.
that sharing it, I think, is what strikes me as the thing that is the makes the difference. Because yeah, you are
Yes.
absolutely all the things you're describing. Paying attention, noticing, entering into a situation, going, I'm not turning up with the answers. I'm turning up ready to find out, and that can be quite that can be nerve-wracking, basically, can't it? I think so. You know, you sort of turn up going, okay, what's going to happen here? I don't know. So that's an important part of it, because otherwise, people go into things having read the research and with the information. That's the other danger, isn't it? The research can get in the way of you staying open-minded. So that process. The other thing, because I've written down, obviously I'm waving up my notes, some of the things that I wrote down that we can maybe talk about, that is like why we do research. So you doing it is because you're wanting to then do so. Is it sort of informing how you relate with somebody?
Exactly, it's part of
why you're there with them.
It's necessary for me to be able to do my job. Even if that research is paying a lot of attention and spending a lot of time just noticing how someone like interacts with like light and shadow, for example, because I don't know, and no one's been able to tell me what their experience of like the visual is, but I know in terms of like how much they can see and how they see, but I do know they respond to light and shadow in an excited way. So it's like there's a lot in there to figure out, and that research often looks like playing and experimenting and trying different things. But it's funny what you say about,
and you're researching because, with that person,
because where I am right now, because you're saying about that difference being that sort of sharing, is I've got to a place where the last couple of projects I've done have looked a bit more outward and gone, okay, how do I share this more widely? Because to do the kind of work I do, there's not this body of established like best practice to go to and look at. It often feels like you're starting from scratch, and it's like, well, I know there are other people out here doing this, so why, we shouldn't be starting from scratch. We should be learning from each other. So that's kind of a question for me right now, is like, how do I take the learning that I'm doing and share it with others in a way that makes sense and learn from other people who are doing this work? Because there's I guess because, you know, the play and access to play of disabled and neurodivergent people has not been a priority, unfortunately. And at points it's been actively suppressed.
And that's the thing where you... I'm trying to think out loud about why something is useful. Why have I found it useful to read accounts by other people exploring the issues about how to document play? And it's mainly because you know, you read it and you go, you could try that, I hadn't thought of it that way, or that child does it like that, or that opens my mind to that activity. So it kind of helps you notice things better. I think that's probably, if I read someone else's account of noting things, it helps me notice things better, and then that helps you make things available, I suppose. Why we do it, I was thinking about why we do this sort of stuff and why anyone does. It's because you think, right, it's valuable to children, so you want to make more of it possible for them, like a right.
Yeah.
But then I also wrote down things like, well, obviously, like you said, people want to make it instrumental to other things, because they, you know, think, well, using play for this, which is, you know, not always bad, but that's part of it. And I also wrote down that we're nosy. People want to find, you know, but that's part of the issue, isn't it? That kind of privacy thing, and children's worlds are, and well, people, not just like you say, people's worlds are their worlds, and who like, why should someone come in and extract that and present it to everybody else publicly? You know, that is that privacy issue. I find that makes me sort of tense, because, you know, when I sometimes think back, you know, for me the reference is always like, well, what, you know, me as a child. I mean, that's not obviously a reference that's useful, but I do think, well, that was if some adult had come prying on into me doing that play, I would have been like, go away, or I wouldn't have done it. I can imagine that feeling.
That's something that sparked off lots of thoughts in my head, because I really believe, and the reason I do the work I do, and like, you know, I don't say this lightly, is I think play is sacred. Like, it's It's this sacred space, like physical, temporal, mental, like it, it's shifting. And part of its magic and importance and beauty, I really believe, lies in its that play often only exists in that moment. It exists, it's happening in that moment for that person, for those people who are there. So when it comes to recording that in some way, whether that's just through notes or through and sharing it, it's it's often I really think that deserves respect and thought. And it's not to say you shouldn't, but I do think it's not something that should be done lightly. I guess like a really simple example for me is like I often work, for example, if I'm working like one to one with like a young person, and we're really like inhabiting this like play space together, then we finish up and that child goes back to their classroom, whatever, and then I have to communicate something of what we've done to the adults around that child, partly to legitimize me being there, and often to legitimize them paying me to be there. But I, yeah, and I often feel like I don't want to tell you a lot of what's just happened because it existed in that time and moment, and that's what's, important about it. But yeah, so I find ways
And
of doing that that feel less invasive, I guess, or yeah, I kind of talk around
that's
what's
the thing, I
happened.
think it, and talk around it, like, and you can describe it in a surface level, and you can acknowledge the things like the reasons that somebody might be there doing it, because that, like you say, that's the instrumentalized it, that's the reason they've said, oh, this will be good for them because, but it's in doing that, it can create this, it perpetuates the idea of what the play is there and for, isn't it? And it, and that, and then you kind of feel like, oh, and I'm just create, I'm part of the system. But I mean, I try not to get too cynical about that, because I kind of think I agree with you in that we can never narrate it, because, like you say, we're in it in a way that we can never narrate our own. So having to sort of speculate and approximate is sort of part of the language we need to use to describe, to say that that's what we're doing, because it's only the only way.
Something that
Well,
just
I
occurred
don't
to
know, that's
me.
where I'm thinking at the minute.
Sorry, Sarah, I just cut over you.
Sorry, go for
Yeah.
it.
Something that just occurred to me was that what I'm trying to avoid is creating a situation. I don't want to be mining that play. I don't want to be saying, okay, what can we use it for? So that doesn't mean, so I might learn things about that child while we're playing. I might learn about an interest. I might learn about a specific way of communicating that like really worked or something that really excited them, and I can maybe communicate that. But what I don't want to do is say treat all the play that happened as a resource for other people, and I think that often, and yeah, I think that's the thing, that's like the kind of distinction of like how I share what's happened is I'm not like, oh, this is a way to trick this child into learning maths better, because I learned this about them in play, which I was gonna say sounds kind of silly, but it's actually not. That's kind of how often people look at play. It's like, I think especially when we talk about things like play-based learning and learning through play, which I'm very much here for. Great, I think there's been more play everywhere. What I'm not here for is that being the only version of play that children get to access, or play only being viewed as valuable if they're learning something. But yeah.
And that's and that yeah then I think the part of the point then in trying to find out about play is trying to find out the value in it in itself. And I so like I've sort of the whole definition maybe is another chat, but the bit I ended up thinking about was the kind of it's an expression of like being alive, and I used to be very much always about the joy of being alive, right? And then I've been reading some other things that have made me question all that, and I've kind of gone, yeah, it's not always the joy, is it? It's not always it's the I'm alive in the world feeling,
and now I've got to deal with that.
Yes, and it's like, and it is just, you think, well, that where does the definitions end on that? But in a way, that's almost that's the definition I feel most at ease with. It's like I'm alive in the world, and it's not a chore. Like I'm not having to chop food to eat. But if I was chopping food to eat, my way of being alive in the world might be that I chopped food in a slightly different way, and I poked at something while I was doing it, and that would be, I'd be bringing play into my chore. So for me, that where I'm at now is. Yeah, being, and so if you're trying to research how humans are alive in the world, good and bad, but that's kind of what play is. I get wary of it's everything and everywhere, and it's sort of trying to then have like some kind of little bracket for it so you can understand it already starts being messing with your mind, because it makes you really aware of, like you say, how it gets used for certain things, like you said, which is good. But you know, here I am, I just tie myself up in knots when you kind of want to just, you know, the point of doing it is to find out more about how to make more of it happen and how adults can help by not being there, helping by setting things up and stepping away. And so you kind of feel like you need to know something, because like you say, if you don't, you don't make it happen for people.
Exactly, because that's the kind of system and world that we're living
in.
But yeah, I think listening to you talk, like, and it comes into that sort of defining play, like how do we research something we can't define and should we define it? And it's actually a lot of the time, I think what we're doing is we're actually researching or paying attention to or interested in the ripple effects of play. We're interested in what it does, what happens because of it or after it. Or what happened before it, or what created the space to make it happen. You know, we're talking about all of this stuff. Even like when people like have research on play-based learning, for example, they're not really researching play. They're researching what it can do rather than what it is, maybe.
Yes. I think that's quite interesting, the ripple effect before it as well as after it, because that's the thing. It's like what things were... I'm doing a ripple gesture now. Well, things were kind of moving towards making that thing happen. And as basic as that is an interchange or a glance with somebody, it could be like a room that was made available.
It
doesn't sound very ripply, for me, but I don't know.
The conditions that make it happen, like, often, like, I'm just trying to think of, like, some actual, like, tangible things that might be. It's like... Oh, when you leave. I've tried, like, recently had this observation of being in a school space, and they had like this box of hats, and I was like, oh, fun, great, a box of hats. But there was just a box of hats like on the side of the playground, and then it was like, why aren't the kids playing with them? And it's like, maybe like just put hats hanging off stuff, and then boom, kids were interested because like it was like. They became playthings because they were they were invitations. And it's like, that's a very simple thing, right? But that was the difference between play happening around that and play not. And those conditions of how it happens, I think that's a very interesting thing to me. Especially, as I said, because I work with so many people who have had their play kind of halted or stopped or... have maybe stopped seeking it out because they don't know what that looks like. That before bit is often the before bit is the thing that I'm usually most interested in, because that's what I need. Like, I need to know and learn how to create these spaces and what will be the certain way of whether I sit next to someone in a room, whether I sit on the opposite side of a room, or whether I hand people objects or just push a closed suitcase their way full of objects. You know, like these, it's really different for different people of like what permissions and what invitations they need.
Oh, I'm just...
And then the after effect.
I put a hat on.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, because the after effect...
Keep going, my brain's going, oh. Yeah.
the after effects are also obviously really important to me, but often how I view the after effects, and I think I want this to change a little bit, is but how I've historically viewed the after effects, is the after effects are the things that I pay attention to and collect so I can share with the people who have the power to make more of it happen, if that makes sense. Like, that's the stuff that I need to like cling on to and record in some way to say, hey, this thing was important.
Because
But
I know,
yeah.
and that's the link to the measure thing, as in, because this person was happier, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. But
Yeah.
I'm just busy with, I'm just my my brain's gonna catch up to that. I'm busy at the minute with the before effects, and
Yeah,
literally because I
please.
had a hat on yesterday, but also because of what I'm, well, because what I'm doing is looking at stuff in like woodlands and stuff like that, where there aren't so hats on trees, but I mean there can be. But sometimes children respond to the objects themselves as being playful, like a tree moving is a thing that's
Yeah.
moving and has a playfulness about it that attracts a child. And that, let's not go into that now, but that really, that's really interesting to me, that whole, the ripple before that we have to create sometimes between objects that in the
Yeah.
manufactured world be like, what is that, has that got a play frame about it? What makes that something that I've got permission to play or encouragement to play or play prompts and stuff compared with a
Yeah.
space that's
And it's that
has
thing,
it
right,
already
of like
inbuilt?
in the ideal world where everyone was able to access and get the play they needed and had the opportunities for that, then we wouldn't probably really need to be thinking about the before effects because we wouldn't need needing to try and create them because they'd already be there. Oh, but maybe when
No,
we were thinking about them,
they'd
we'd be
be
thinking
there.
about them just for fun because it's like, oh, we could do something different, like something new, rather than just like how to make anything happen at
Just
all, you know?
assuming that it's always there. And then
It's kind of.
like you say, the after effects is that's it's quite interesting that you say that, because that becomes the place where all the input, all the interest is from people. Well, you know, we're in the world we're in with resources that are then have to be allocated, and so you decide where you allocate them according to how useful they are, and then therefore you have to prove something's useful by the after effects of it and how you measure that after effects. And then and that way, you know, although people say, oh yes, well, we shouldn't spend too long on that, I think, yeah, but we kind of have to, because that's how you get the resources allocated. And there's like creative ways around that and all kinds of ways of doing those things, but it still is important, isn't it, to actually say this was a worth, this person had a better time because of this. It's not like it's not unimportant to talk about that.
No,
It's
it can be frustrating
how you talk about
sometimes
it, isn't it?
'cause it's frustrating to justify something that feels so just like human. It's like, well, yeah, of course. We need that. That should, you know.
Like we need clean water to drink because that's what we need, isn't it? Isn't that obvious to everybody? Why have we got to prove we need that because that's sort of what we all need?
Yeah, we need clay because I don't know, that's where our, I just don't have the words for it. That's where our like spirit lies. That's where our That's
I
where a lot
know,
of
being
meaning lies.
aliveness for
It's
me, that's
where,
being,
yeah.
yeah.
I have a
No, I'm
sorry, I have a slight provocation. I say that as if it's gonna be big and serious. It's not at all. Because I had a little when I was thinking about this, something I also thought about was research as play. Because we haven't really talked about that. Rather
Oh,
and in particular so from my perspective, being an autistic person who thinks a lot about autistic play, and some really two really common themes of autistic play that I talk about a lot and think about and am fascinated by and excited by and engaging myself is one thing that I call concept jamming. So, and this is playing with ideas as if they are physical toys, but you're playing with ideas and concepts. And to do that requires learning and research. And that can be a drive. Like I know if, like for me as a kid, reading about things was 100% part of my play. Reading about things was like the same as like going to a toy box and picking things out. It, you know, because I'm reading about things and I'm getting these little ideas and concepts that I can play with. And then another kind of autistic play thing, that theme that I talk about, think about, is deep investigation, which is just this drive to take something and just go deeper in and in and in and just keep learning more and more and more and more about it, whether that's an object, whether that's a subject, whether that's walking around a garden over and over and over again and taking in more each time, you know. And these are two kind of patterns, shapes that I observe and think about and kind of work with and do myself and see happening. And and those, I think both of those could be argued as research as play. So I wanted to just sort of throw that out there.
That makes a lot of sense. And research as play as research, you know. That I was talking to someone a while ago who was talking about how they were really happy when they were working with ideas and writing and thinking and writing and thinking. And as an adult, you know, and like you say, and that because of its creativity in what they were doing, and the kind of creativity part of it, the concepts, playing with the concepts, understanding them in order to mess around with them, it's kind of free flowing and creative. It's not a kind of requirement for a particular thing. It's that kind of creative association that is part of it. And the going into the kind of the wallowing, going in deeper into things and exploring it in lots of different ways. It's kind of the thing about that is, for me, thinking about that is, it's a whole body brain thing as well. Like, it's not just sitting at your computer going googling further and further into a little wormhole of information, isn't it? It's exploring it in physical body ways as well. A kind of not necessarily, but it can be, you know, it has that potential to have it in all those different directions, which I think is that expanding the idea of research as being something that's just reduced to words as representation. But that links back to not mystical idea, but romantic idea about play is nice and involving everyone playing nicely and doing certain things together in a certain way. But actually it's quite, you know, sometimes you can hear children, you know, sometimes children narrate play, and they're basically narrating the whole play without actually moving. And that's the play. You do that, and I do this, and you do that, and then I do that, and then they don't actually act it out with their bodies, they just narrate it all. So it's a bit like that concept play, isn't it? That kind of, we'll play the ideas here, what happens in the story, but we won't necessarily do it. And all of that is research, because you're kind of going, what is it like if I am this? What is it like if you're that? What does it feel like? How would we be if we were those things? The thing isn't it? I think opening up, using play. Oh, what am I saying? What I mean is thinking of research like play.
Yeah.
Is helps both, because it's making you aware of like how play functions in life. I'm starting to use the word use, but why we do play? Why we play? Because we're alive, and we want to go. Like you say, what's the consequence of that? What does it mean to be alive? What is that over there? What does it do? What is that thought in my head? What does it do? It's a kind of exploration of things.
It's funny, right? Because
part two. I'm waving my finger.
Yes.
Because we're nearly out of time, and I feel like we need to do a part two.
I think so too. Also, I think this is something we'll probably both keep changing our minds about and having new ideas about and coming across different challenges. So I think a part two will be will be needed.
Okay, so can we say that then, to be continued when we've pondered
TBC.
It a bit more, and yes. Very exciting. Right. fantastic
our first cliffhanger.
To chat with you again as ever. Yeah. Right, okay, that's the end. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening. That was the Play Talk podcast. See you next time.